everybody. This is Phil Town.
And this is Danielle Town.
Welcome to the Invested Podcast. We are on episode 398. It is December 6th. Very exciting. We're going to talk about...
Or whatever day you're listening to this buckets. In the future.
Yeah, exactly. Oh my gosh. And Danielle, you're feeling good. That's great. Great to see that. Fantastic.
I love how you are saying that. It's great. It's not always true, but it's great.
No, you're recovering. It's amazing how fast you're recovering now. It's really cool. Must seem slow to you, but it's fast to me. You're doing great.
That's good. Yeah. So we clearly right now I'm not feeling like I'm recovering a lot because like my brain is super slow. So we ended last time talking about Dalio and these four, I don't know if the four buckets related to Dalio or not, but we ended talking about this mysterious four buckets. And I'm excited to hear what those are.
Yeah, it's an interesting concept that Ray Dalio kind of pioneered and talked about in his own work. You know, he's become more and more sort of globally transparent as he's gotten toward retirement, or you know what passes for retirement among fund managers, which means they're still they keep their hand in all the way to the end,
because it's life, right? Like that's what I love about discovering investing, is that it's not a project or a job. It's just living life and discovering that there's things to support. I don't know if he sees it that way, but that's been my experience.
I mean, it's really an interesting career. It's like people don't really retire from farming. You know, it's like that kind of thing. It's like you're a farmer. That's what you do.
Yeah.
Right. You raise your children in it. It's sort of that kind of thing. And managing your money is like that. It's something you don't really retire from. It's sort of just what you do.
And do you think it's really managing the money, or is it more like learning, researching, learning, finding conclusions out of what you've researched and learned about?
Two sides of the same coin, eh?
One
side is the knowledge step, and the other side's the doing step.
Right.
And,
true.
And you have both of those. And it's funny, I was just writing a kind of updating a blog that I was doing, and how they write these things, the eight great secrets for blah, blah, blah.
Right, the clickbait. Like,
yeah. I was thinking of what are these really critical things then about investing? And, you know, one of them is just you must learn to read. You must learn to
read. You must learn to read.
I would encourage you to learn to read fast. Or maybe that's what I mean. You must learn to read fast or listen fast.
I was just going to say, or get an Audible account or a Libby account or whatever your given audiobook system is, and put it on 1.5x speed and learn to take voice notes.
That's it. It's so powerful that you can absorb so much information now. It's just... And it almost doesn't matter, as long as you're not just fiction. You know, if you're doing biographies, or if you're just reading about an area of life that you're interested in, about what's going on in the Ukraine war, or what's happening with climate change. You know, there's a great book out there, you guys, called Unsettled, by the way, that I just finished. Unsettled is written, I don't even remember the author's name, I just wasn't going to bring it up in the podcast, but since we're talking about reading... Go read that. It's remarkable. It was written by one of the top officials in the Obama administration for climate change, and NYU professor, physics, super, knowledgeable scientist with great credentials, who has written a book that the New York Times won't cover. They won't say a word about it, because he is basically calling out the whole scientific community on having produced good science and then fudged the abstracts over and over and over again in the interest of promoting the end result, which is highly, moral result of less pollution and, taking better care of our planet. But what he's pointing to is that the science, the abstracts don't say, they stretch what the science proves. And then the New York Times takes the abstract and stretches it further. And so we end up with crazy things like the storms are bigger and worse than ever in history. And that's all climate change. And then he points out that there's no change in hurricanes at all in the last 120 years, zero. And and points to the research on hurricanes that says that, and then shows that the abstract stretches it, and then what the New York Times does with the stretched abstract to conclude that hurricanes are worse now. And it's just fascinating. And if you're an investor, you read this kind of thing, and it starts pulling the world together in ways that not everybody sees. For example, Berkshire Hathaway has a huge reinsurance arm. And they've been reporting for years that there's no change in the policy, in the filings for reinsurance. There's no change historically. They're not experiencing more losses.
There aren't more claims. Is that what
There aren't more claims, okay. Which there would be if there are these superstorms. And so you start to go, whoa, here's the research that's been stretched, and here's Berkshire, which is paying real money if there's real claims. And anyway, you do that as an investor. I don't want to make a point of view rather, but you're doing that as an investor looking for reality. And often what you find is there's a disconnect between the market perception of reality and reality. And this disconnect is what Warren Buffett calls, the difference between fear and greed. Is that there's an emotional disconnect between reality and the emotion of what they think that reality is. So let's say, just for this example, that there's a disconnect between the reality of major storms, wreaking havoc on the planet, and the actual fact of no real extra payments being made by insurance companies. And I'm not saying this is all true.
Well, let's be clear that statistics are... I mean, I think that's another really cool thing to learn.
Well, let me don't lose the point here. Hold on.
Go ahead. Yeah.
Let me don't lose the point, because the point is not look at that specific disconnect and attack it. Okay. The point is there are disconnects where reality is different than what is being perceived as reality by the market. And this was thought by academics to not be possible. Their assumption was that these people managing billions of dollars never have an emotional disconnect from reality, that the market always is connected to reality perfectly or nearly perfectly, and therefore prices and values must be the same. When in fact, Buffett has been looking at this for 70 years and realizing that prices and values become disconnected from time to time because of greed or because of fear. So that's the thing that makes this so fascinating in terms of being an investor for life, is that you start to read and you start to find that your opinion about something everyone fears may be very, very different from
absolutely.
What
I keep finding is this experience of looking at statistics and discovering that, I mean, every statistician knows this, every mathematician knows this, but most people who haven't studied those things don't know how easy it is to draw very different conclusions from the same statistics. Right. And it's something I feel like we consistently talk about and bring up on the podcast, here's XYZ and everybody's saying it's, equaling like a super strong company, but we're looking at XYZ and we're saying that equals certain doom. So what's up with that? And I think looking at that kind, looking behind the data, I think is what's really interesting. And it's what I have grown to love about the numbers. And yes, I'm saying I have grown to love the numbers in companies.
Goodness.
Because
I
that's
heard you say that. Oh
no,
God,
I mean, I don't
awesome.
Really love the experience of it. But what I love is looking behind the data, and the numbers are the data in a public company, in any company, but the public companies we're looking at. And so that's what I find so cool, is like being able to go straight to the source, which is the annual report numbers, instead of whereas before, the only thing I knew was you read an article about a company and the reporter tells me what to think about it. But now I know how to go get the raw data and draw my own conclusions.
It's like, if you don't know those sorts of things, you would read, you know, the reporter is saying, oh, the EBITDA is up 10% compounded. And you go oh, wow, the EBITDA is up 10% compounded. That must be really great.
I mean, it's not just that. Like, how many companies have I bought or sold as a lawyer where we did, you know, we had the EBITDA involved in the deal and we needed to make sure that they had to meet certain numbers in order to have a cliff of an eventual payment, which, by the way, is never a good idea in a deal, but that's another story. And I was just like, great, the EBITDA, that's normal. That's what everybody uses. Awesome. That makes sense to me. Never thought about it beyond that, because I didn't have to. You know, that wasn't my job to deal with the actual deal points.
It's what experts are saying is good, right?
Well, it's just what was used. It is still, it's still what is used. So
it's used in court. It's amazing. And this is,
yeah, well, and I mean, again, like, it's not your lawyer's job to say, like, don't use the EBITDA. That's, you know, that would be highly inappropriate.
It's kind of what financial.
It's interesting to just know the background now from the other side in a way, and start to think about like what's normal, and you just sort of start to accept it because it's so common.
Yeah, and the reason we're using EBITDA is because Charlie Munger and Warren Buffett think EBITDA is a fabulous accounting term for hiding problems with the company and being used by scoundrels who don't want you to really know how badly they're doing. So they play with numbers. And this is what Daniel's getting to, is that this is just how you can do it. I mean, look at what's the deal with FTX. This is a crypto exchange that just blew up and is now in bankruptcy.
It just occurred to me, like, how far we are from the four buckets, and we're like 10 minutes in. But yes, I haven't forgotten,
we'll
everybody.
But I just
like, this is normal for us. If you're new to our podcast,
experts, and I'm gonna
this
talk
is normal
right over the top
for
of
us.
You here, because I want to keep going on this point.
I know, I'm not stopping you.
Experts are being sued now by so many people. Really, personalities who were not expert at all, but you thought that, well, if Tom Brady thinks FTX is good, it's got to be good because Tom Brady's a smart guy and a super quarterback, and so you know, I'm gonna buy into it because Tom Brady's in it.
Okay.
And you'd think these people would be doing research and you'd think they would know, and the truth is they don't. So you can, one of the main points of this podcast for the last 8 years has been that you will probably not do worse than any of the experts that you could have tell you what to do. If you do this on your own, then you're very unlikely
learn and practice. Yeah.
Almost if you throw darts.
I mean, come on.
I'm not exaggerating. They've shown this over and over again that monkeys picking stocks out of a barrel do as well or better than experts at picking stocks over a long period of time. And I mean, it's just, it's the basis of efficient market theory. It is the very basis of that. So the truth is that you're the exception, you guys. If you're the exception to the rule is nobody beats the market. And that rule is there because of the way most people invest in the stock market. But if you are going to invest the way the very best investors do it, the way we're trying to show you guys over all these podcasts, then I think you have very, very good chance of doing very much better than anybody out there and who would manage your money for you. So to the point of this podcast, we're talking about four buckets. I think this is good stuff. One of the ways that one of the great experts that we really do admire actually doesn't invest the way we recommend and the way we do it, or the way Buffett does it, or Munger, is Ray Dalio, and we've talked about him many times in the podcast. And a long time ago, we talked about the four buckets, I think. But it's coming up more and more as the economy goes into these shocks from oil rising, Ukraine happening, inflation taking off. shocking the economy, then I think this thing becomes much more important to think about. The four buckets, should I go into it? You want to hear what they are?
Yes, please.
Okay. So this is an idea that will protect you for any economic conditions or any economic shocks. Ray is a phenomenal researcher. He runs Bridgewater, which is one of the largest hedge funds in the world, and has an 18% compounded rate of return for over 40 years. Unbelievable, great track record as a macro investor, somebody that's looking at the whole picture and finding opportunities to invest globally. And he put together this portfolio idea to protect against any sort of economic calamity, any extremes that have happened any time in the last 100 years, or even, he's gone back with his research 500 years deep. And so he came up with this concept of four buckets and calls this portfolio an all-weather portfolio. So any kind of storms, this will have assets that really do well in any economic period, economic growth, economic decline, inflationary periods, deflationary periods. This thing is going to perform. It's going to have a bucket that performs extremely well. Now, the way
this
Ray
does
this.
This is his all-weather portfolio.
Yeah.
Okay.
Now, the way Ray does this. Go ahead.
Is the four buckets, because you didn't say this last time. So the four buckets that you mentioned, is that the same as Ray Dalio's all-weather portfolio, or do you did you do your own tweaks?
Yeah, no, it's the same as his.
Because he hasn't talked about, to my knowledge, what exactly the all-weather portfolio consists of.
Well, he did in great detail. He's written that up actually in a white paper that he did.
Has he?
Yeah, it's worth looking up.
Okay. Because I remember we were trying to figure out years ago, like, what was in the all-weather portfolio.
Well, that's because the white paper is so sophisticated, it's very difficult for an ordinary investor to duplicate what he can do as an institutional investor with billions of dollars.
Yeah.
Particularly in the area of bonds. So let's get into this.
Okay.
The four buckets are a bucket for inflation along with economic growth, which is what we had. The second one is inflation along with economic constriction, which is where we are. And then deflation with economic growth, which is where we were for about 30 years from the 80s all the way through where bonds and interest rates are going down. This is deflationary.
Hold on, I'm one step behind. Okay, so
okay.
Second was inflation along with economic constriction. The third one is deflation along with what?
Or economic contraction, sorry, wrong word. And then the fourth one is inflation and economic growth. Got that one?
Yeah, yeah.
And then inflation with economic contraction.
Contraction, got it.
Okay, then deflation with economic growth.
Ah, okay.
Right? And then deflation with economic contraction.
Ah, understood. So it's a quadrant.
Right. It's a quadrant. So the four parts of this matrix or the quadrant are inflation, deflation on the top, and economic growth, economic contraction on the side, if you're building the quadrant.
Got it.
And so then the thing that Dalio did is kind of lay out in his white paper how to get a very solid rate of return in every one of these buckets. And so the most difficult one is where you have a lot of bonds. And if you've got bonds, the problem with bonds is they give you a very low return typically. So in other words, if you've got a bucket that has, you should be in bonds here. Those bonds are not going to produce a very good return. They're going to produce 1% to 3% return, let's say, in the past 10 years.
Okay.
And when that happens, that bucket rate of return will go down. So Dalio had to solve that problem and have that bucket have high rates of return. And the way he did it was leverage. He borrowed money in other words, margined himself into bonds. And by doing so, carefully, he could produce a much higher rate of return with a very low risk.
Hasn't he had the all-weather portfolio like out there publicly for some time now? Wasn't it doing really badly for a while? And that was publicly reported on. Like, I keep remembering seeing headlines about how he's not doing good, but it's because
badly from
exactly
time.
But it's because that's the whole idea, is that it won't necessarily outperform for long periods of time, but then when things go haywire,
right,
it'll be decent. Yeah, is
right.
that the idea?
And that's the thing, is underperforming is relative, right? So if the S&P 500 is doing 15% a year, which it did, then a portfolio of four bucket portfolio is going to underperform that significantly, right? Because it's going to aim for being able to be very consistently good returns regardless of the weather. Of course, what the reporters do is find something to chew on for guys like Dalio and Buffett, who are such iconic investors. They love to find a flaw or think of they've got a flaw.
I just Googled it really quickly here, and there's so much out there about this.
No doubt.
Wow. So anybody wants to spend a weekend learning about the all-weather portfolio, there is a lot to read.
It's interesting, you know, really how to figure this out. I can throw some things out there. But by the way, I'm not a four bucket investor, and neither is Buffett. So we're sort of putting this out there as just an interesting idea. Let's say you have a pretty sizable portfolio. Mm-hmm. Let's say you're very comfortable, actually. And what you want to do is remain comfortable over the course of your retirement. This kind of thinking is quite good for that. So,
okay.
In other words,
so
if you
can we talk about
made,
what would go in each quadrant?
Yeah.
Okay. All
right. So you got inflationary environment. You've got about five things that you can put in there. Essentially that should do well in inflation. So real estate is one of them. And as a stock market investor, that would be a REIT investment. You could do a REIT investment by buying REET, which is an ETF for REITs, for example. So real estate, gold over the long run should keep up with inflation.
I have a question about the real estate one, though.
Sure.
As inflation goes up, the Fed has started raising interest rates. That tends to be the usual response.
Yeah.
And that's what's happening now. Wouldn't that put a damper on the real estate market, because interest rates have been so low for such a long time? Or is
they'll put a damper on it when it starts to actually impact inflation. In other words, when it starts to become deflationary or stagflationary, when it starts to have an impact, yes, then real estate's going to start to flatten or go south. And it may start doing that, right? I mean, in other words, we've had this inflationary environment for at least a year, and the Fed has now raised interest rates. And now we're starting to get to a place where maybe it's starting to come under control. So you're starting to see the curve kind of roll over on the top. But REITs have continued to do okay so far.
Okay.
I mean, they're not at their heyday by any means. That was a couple years ago.
Okay.
And gold, you'll notice, hasn't done anything at all. It's flat. Commodities, on the other hand, commodities have taken off. Commodities ETF would be like DBC, would be one you could do. And commodities are massively being impacted by inflation. This is everything from, you know, wheat to orange juice. Then energy, which could be called a commodity, but it's in its own separate category. Energy is going to be oil and gas, power, that sort of thing. Energy, of course, has
exploded.
Are we
still on the inflation list? Okay.
Yeah. So energy has exploded. And then finally, consumer staples. And consumer staples are things like Walmart, Pepsi, Coke, stuff like that.
Hmm. Okay. Like stuff that we still have to buy even when we are just trying to get by.
Right. So it, this is, I suppose, it's fascinating, Coke is a, you know,
question mark on that one.
That somebody asked Buffett if about this, really, about this particular bucket. Actually, that's not really the bucket. That's the inflation part of the bucket. So let's consider inflation and economic contraction, since that's where we're at, right? There's one more thing that you should be putting in here, and that's cash. Cash can be very important in economic contraction with inflation, interestingly enough, right? You'd think, wait a second, cash is the wrong thing entirely because it's inflation is hurting the buying power of cash. And it turns out that isn't really the case right now. The dollar is getting stronger around against world currencies. And cash is also an asset. Sometimes we forget that. And it is really good when you're, particularly when you're looking for opportunities to invest the way we do in a time where fear starts to grow.
And I would say it depends which currency your cash is in.
Yeah, very much so. If you're in Argentine pesos, maybe not so good.
If you're in the British pound, maybe not so good.
Maybe not so good. If you're in the Swiss franc, maybe so good. In the dollar, very good right now.
Yeah, the dollar has been
very good. Yeah. So very good. That's sort of that bucket of inflation with economic contraction. Now, if this keeps rolling, we'll get to another bucket, which is going to be sort of stagflation, sort of the next bucket that we could roll over to. And a
would
lot of these are the
count
same.
Under deflation?
Yeah, that would be deflation with economic economic contraction. We can call that stagflation.
Yeah. Got it. Yeah.
And with stagflation, you've still got
a
lot of the same
this.
Things. Now, what you also might want to put some money into is short-term U.S. bonds. Because now those are starting to go up substantially. In other words, you can get a higher interest rate on a 2-year U.S. Treasury bond than you can on a 10-year Treasury bond.
Are we in the deflation category
now?
We
are. We're in sort of the deflation economic contraction category.
Okay.
So that bucket. So we had inflation, economic contraction, where we are right now. Then we have where we're headed if the Federal Reserve gets things under control. There's more deflation with economic contraction. They're going to throw us into a continued recession in order to get control of inflation. And in that period, again, that's where you want pretty much all the same things we had. But we want to maybe shift out of consumer staples over to healthcare a little bit, or you can do both. But healthcare in the form of a ETF like IYH, for example, would be a healthcare that owns a bunch of stocks like United Healthcare, Pfizer, Merck.
It's so funny because we like never talk about ETFs. So.
No, we never do. But again, this is if you're protecting, you're already.
Yeah, this is like mega diversification land, which is not our land usually.
Not our land. But we live in a world where what this podcast is about is helping you go from I'm not financially independent by any means to becoming financially independent to creating generational wealth. That's what this is about. What
yes.
we're talking about today
for me
is,
personally.
Okay, you've already got exactly for you personally. This is for people who they already got it made. They just want to keep it made. They don't want to see the value of their portfolio decline against inflation. They don't want to be wiped out by deflation, by recession.
Yeah.
And they're not going to spend the time to buy individual companies. This is for you guys.
Okay.
We don't need to talk about it that much, but
we'll
talk about it for a couple of podcasts here.
Let's pause us here. Because my notes are a mess and I need to figure this out and then pick up next time with, God, I don't even know what category we're on. Deflation and economic growth, maybe? I don't know.
We'll start over.
We'll start over.
We'll review. All right, sounds good. We'll pick this up, and we'll talk to you next week about this some more.
Thanks, right, everybody. Until
then, time to go play.
See ya. Bye.
Hi, guys. Thanks for listening to Invested. If you enjoyed this episode and you want more information or to listen to additional episodes, visit our website at investedpodcast.com and sign up for my virtual workshop right there. Spots are definitely limited for this event. I'm not kidding. They really are. They sell out very quickly. So everything discussed on this podcast, by the way, is either my opinion or it's Danielle's opinion. And it's really important. It's not to be taken as investing advice because I am not your financial advisor, nor have I considered your personal situation as your fiduciary. So remember that. You're on your own here. This podcast is for your entertainment and education only, and I really hope you enjoyed it.